All right, everybody, let's have a few moments of silence and say the Serenity Prayer together. God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right. I'm Tarek. I'm alcoholic. I really don't know where I want to go with this right now. We've sort of been flowing through the process, maybe a little bit bouncing around. And I think about the first time I did a fifth step and, you know, getting free of a lot of guilt and shame. You know, just when you spend time in trap hotels and you spend time in trap houses and abandoned houses and you're out on the street, you know, there's a lot of deviant sexual behavior and a lot of stuff a man doesn't want to admit. And, you know, you have all of this. I remember in that first fifth step, I would go to this guy's house on Sundays and I had a big 1-inch binder that was probably close to an inch thick because I had so much stuff I had written down as part of that process. And I don't think it's the most effective way to do it, but it's the way that I did it. And I remember I was getting to the sex inventories at the end, the conduct inventory, but there was a lot of the sexual behavior, you know, homosexual experiences, all, you know, trannies, all that stuff, man. I'm not even I have no identification with it as I sit up here and talk to you about it, because I know it's just another one of the many list of experiences that I was given as a human being here. I don't blame anybody. I'm not ashamed of any of it. But it took a lot of spiritual work and psychological work to get to that point. But I remember that first fifth step, and I'm sitting across a coffee table I've got my fifth step laid out on the ottoman, and I'm sitting in a chair, and he's across the coffee table in a Lazy Boy. And I go over there on Sundays, and I can read for 3 hours, and he won't let me stay for more than 3 hours. And like one Sunday I asked him why, and he's like, well, I'm not willing to expose myself to your toxic energy for more than 3 hours at a time. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And so I remember on like the fourth or fifth Sunday, it was time to break into that sex inventory. And I remember he was sitting far enough away from me where I could have turned 4 or 5 pages all at one time, and he would never have known. You know, was I going to tell him the deep cranny, the dark cranny that was part of my experience? And when the time came, I was compelled to read it, and I read it. And I remember him loving me and giving me a hug and kissing me on the cheek. And then he sat down and he told me his stories, because he had a lot of the same experiences. Man, when they say the weight of the world is lifted, and not everybody has this experience in the fifth step. Some people hear me tell this story and they're like, well, I got to have the same experience. No, no, no. We all have these watershed moments, these turning points at different points in the step process. And as I've worked the steps over the years, I've had similar experiences at different steps. Right? And so for me, it was just the fact that the confessional aspect of the fifth step was monumental for me. I still to this day can see myself leaving the front door of his house and walking across his front lawn to my car and experiencing a degree of freedom I never knew was possible, because I told another man my entire life story. And so, but then you come out of there and you've got a list of these defects of character, which, like in the beginning, they were the general ones, right? Oh, I'm selfish. I'm dishonest. I'm inconsiderate. And so I just did my hour returning home, and I took a seventh step. Right, I had some general broad defects, but it wasn't until years and years and years later where I would understand what Bill Wilson wrote in his story when he said, my newfound friend came to take them away root and branch. Never did I take the time to get to what the root was. The root was a lot of the assumptions I'd made about the world. It was a lot of the self-defeating ideas I had about myself. It was a lot of the old ideas that I still carried with me. And her example of that old idea, you know, with her dad, is one of the most profound things I've ever heard. You know, how we will create a reality around that's not even true. And there's something that I can't remember where I heard this. It might have been Sandy Beach, but I had to write it down the first time I heard it. So I want to read it to you. Because what ends up happening around defects of character, we carry guilt. We carry some shame. And what I heard Sandy say in a workshop was, with guilt, we have this fear of punishment, like we've done something wrong. Right? But with shame, there's a fear of being abandoned. I had never, you know, I always thought of shame as like, yeah, there's something wrong with me. Whereas guilt was, I did something wrong, which are, those are correct interpretations. But when he said that there's a fear of abandonment, and that's why we have that, I was like, oh my God. So guilt in a lot of ways is quantitative, where shame is qualitative. There's a quality to it. In order to overcome shame, a new way of seeing has to take place in a human being. A new perspective is required, or a letting go of old ideas. With the process, as it relates to our guilt, we can be reformed like a convict gets reformed. But with shame, the only solution is transformation. And so when I recognize my own imperfection, my capacity to accept the imperfection of others increases. And so another definition for humility that I like to use is an honest accounting of my character limitations. My self-examination, my reckoning with my character flaws. I'm going to give you some examples of, it's best to tell stories, right? So here's how my character defects play out today. I travel. I'm a traveling salesman, right? So I'm out of town every week for work. I'm on my way home Thursday. Right? Tough day. Tough week I have sacrificed for my family. And I want to get my bags out of the car. I want to walk in the door, and I want the 10-year-old boy and the 14-year-old boy to come up to, you know, I'm their stepfather, to come up and say, we've missed you. Where have you been all week? Right? We're so glad you're home. I want my partner, I want her to stop what she's doing and greet me at the door. But I come home and there's no fanfare whatsoever. Right? No fanfare. My sponsor gets calls about how underappreciated I am. I feel like I'm a goddamn ATM machine. That's how I experience myself. And thank God he's such a gentle giant. He just listens to me, right? And you know what's where I get taken is, okay, so who's raising these two boys while you're out making money? You know, one boy has to go to therapy. One boy has tennis. The other boy has football and tennis now. She has to, you know, her parents sometimes need things. She's got a sister that has schizophrenia. And so, you know, there might be an extension of some responsibility she has to fulfill with all that. She's an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She sponsors ladies. She has a sponsor. She works full time. And here I am walking in the front door saying, where's my fanfare? You know, the quickest way I play God these days is I keep this scorecard in my head, right? The idea, like we talk about it in here, is like, why is it that I can meet a stranger, a guy that I would like to carry the message to, and I'm just willing to sacrifice everything in that moment for that person? But then it comes to my family, and I can't see that, you know? And these are how character defects show up today, right? They show up with my inability to play the role I've been assigned. All right, so we are at, it's a couple weeks ago, so my 14-year-old picked up a tennis racket in April, and he's now started playing matches, and he's really good for 5-6 months playing tennis, and he had his first singles match, and you know me, I play tennis, and so I've played with him a lot, and I forget the role I'm assigned is father, not tennis coach. and so he's in his first tennis match, and I am aware, I'm self-aware enough to know I don't need to criticize him in front of the other parents right now. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be that guy. So I'm criticizing him to his mom in a text message. Okay? You know, he's doing this wrong. Did he forget how to play? Why is he doing that? Right? And so he's losing 5-love, And I walk over to him between the fifth and the sixth game, and I give him some advice, unsolicited. Guys, unsolicited advice is criticism. Right? So I give him some unsolicited advice, and my 14-year-old turns to me, and he goes, "Shut up." In the earshot of another parent. And I'm coming unglued, right? Not real. I'm like, I got good motive here. I'm trying to be a supportive parent. I'm at your tennis match, you know? I've gotten you all these things for tennis and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm texting with his mom. That language is inexcusable. You know, I can't believe you did that in front of another parent, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I agree. Go talk to him. And so after he loses, I walk over to him. Like, imagine, put yourself in his shoes. This is what we, in an ideal world, when we're conscious, like truly like, okay, thy will be done. Everyone is, let people be. You know, we say live and let live. It's let live and live is what the saying should be. Let live. I refuse to let live. I walk over to this wounded animal, right? He has lost his first tennis match. He is now embarrassed. Right? He's full of that anxiety. He's beating himself up worse than anybody can beat him up. And I walk over to him again, and I said, his name is Ryan. I said, Rye, please, 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 please don't ever talk to me like that. And he looks at me again, and he goes, shut up. And so now I'm coming even more unglued, and mom sees I'm coming unglued. So she rushes over, right? But this is how we set the ball rolling, right? And so mom goes home with the boys, and she unleashes on the older one in the car. The little one doesn't see his mom ever lose her temper. Little one starts crying. So she's got little one in the car crying. She's just blown up on the 14-year-old. Everyone is in a bad mood, right? And here I am setting the ball rolling. Why? Because I refuse to play the role I've been assigned. I'd like to assign roles. I want to assign my roles. I want to assign your roles. Right. This is the problem we have. One of my biggest character defects is this. All of you are the people that play a role in my life. Okay. I have a screenplay for each of you. This is how I need you to act in my life. In order for me to be okay, I need you to act this way. I need you to believe these things. Right. But I never give you your screenplay. I just treat you like you have your screenplay of how you're supposed to be in my life. Right. The other analogy or metaphor, Sandy Beach has a great one about the projector, right? It's like we're all sitting in this movie theater. Let's assume Lindsay and I are sitting in the crowd with you. We're in the movie theater. This is reality. It's constantly presenting itself, the people in it. We are constantly seeing reality, and the projector booth is God's light, right? Shining into reality. God's just God, and that's what he does, man. He's just disclosing reality maybe to himself. I don't know how it works. That's like an idea I work with. What ends up happening is like over the course of time, I develop these assumptions about the world, assumptions about myself, and assumptions about you. And I have all these little reels inside a duffel bag, right? And for reality is presenting itself, instead of saying to myself, thy will be done. It's one of the most profound parts of the big book that I overlooked for so many years. On page 87, it says, we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful, and we ask for the right thought or action. I constantly try to remind myself that I am no longer running the show, humbly saying, because anytime I'm going to God, I'm going to my sponsor. I'm going to Lindsay. I'm going to anyone. It's humble. It's an act of humility. Because what's that doing? Like I've said, it's distancing me from self-sufficiency. Anything that distances me from self-sufficiency is an act of humility. And it says here, by humbly saying to myself, to God, thy will be done. Then I'm in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions like I made that day, assigning myself the role of coach. Right? These are how my defects show up today. I need to be important. I have to get the last word in. My time is more important than your time. I mean, I can go on and on. These are the defects that I'm working with today. And but the thing about it, you know, after I was able to let the whole thing play out, I had to make some amends, right? I had to make some quick amends. But the best one I made was when I went to the 14-year-olds, because I went out of town the next week. Man, I mean, yeah, I got the silent treatment all day Sunday and Monday. Silent treatment. No one in the house wants to talk to me. I didn't even blow up really on anyone. But what I created by setting the ball rolling, even though my motives were good, was a horrible situation in our home. And that's how I play God today. You know, I assign roles. And I get back Thursday, and the first thing I do is I come home and I sit my 14-year-old down and we have a conversation. And he got to watch me make an amends to him. And I got to explain to him what an amends is and, like, why I'm doing this. Because, you know, I hurt you. I stepped on your toes. I did something I shouldn't have done. My job is to be your father. My job is not to be your tennis coach. We already have a tennis coach. We pay for the tennis coach, right? We don't need another tennis coach. And this is what we're up against with the step six and seven. But the thing I love about our program is the numbers off the steps will eventually fall off. Right. I need form in the beginning. The form serves a purpose, but in the end, the form falls off. These steps are bleeding into each other now. And that only comes with practice. And so now the defects activate a 10th step. Right? They activate self-examination. They activate an 11th step because they are a source of dialogue with my higher power. They would go back to the 10th step if I need to discuss it with someone immediately. If I have access to, okay, I need thy will be done is another way of saying love and tolerance is our code. That's what that morphs into in real time when I'm able to say thy will be done. You know, if you want to have an interesting experiment with yourself, I encourage you to do this. Put your alarm to go off every hour on the hour. We do this in my sponsor. When I take groups of guys through the steps, we'll do this for a few days. Like my alarm will go off at 7:50, 8:50, 9:50. I do it 10 minutes to the hour because I got a lot of meetings for my job on the hour. So I don't want it to go off right at the beginning of the meeting. I do it 10 minutes before. And what that does is it forces me to see in a very sad way how much this world distracts me and puts me into autopilot. It, like, mesmerizes me. It puts me into a trance where I can't think about God. All right? And so when the alarm goes off, you just remember. You just remember God. You maybe say a prayer and you're quiet for a minute or two, then you resume your day. Just do that practice for a few days and report back to me what you end up finding. You know, I said it earlier, and I got away from it in one of the sessions about God, like my relationship with alcohol and drugs dismembered me, to be torn apart, being when something is dismembered. But what if God's remembering us? He's putting us back together, right? Slowly. He began to remember me the night he dressed up as those police officers. He's been remembering me ever since. When I did that fifth step and I was able to intimately disclose all those things I'd wanted to take to my grave, he was putting me back together. These character defects have the ability to improve my relationship with my higher power, believe it or not. When I use a 10th step, I'm trying to think about God as often as possible. So where does this come from in our literature? Let's go to page 567. I mean, I know you guys don't have books, but I like to read the Spiritual Experience Appendix. It's on the second page of that Spiritual Experience Appendix. It's an overlooked paragraph. Most of us think this awareness, the word awareness implies a focus, attention. My awareness is drawn to something, right? Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves, God, is the essence, central point of the spiritual experience. Or more religious members call it God consciousness. So what that translates into for me is I have to think about God as often as possible. What do I struggle with throughout the course of the day? My character defects. My defects. I'm up against an old idea that doesn't serve me very well in the moment that I demand that you give me some fanfare so you can show your appreciation for the sacrifice I make for this family. All right? That's how one of them shows up. So through these defects, I remember God, because I can't, on my own, find a solution for any of these defects of character. All I can tell you is when I am aware of God's presence, I engage other human beings in a different way. That's all I can tell you. And so for me, as we get into like perhaps a discussion about the 10th step later on, the 10th step is a form of self-examination as I am engaging with you throughout the course of the day if my 10th step is active. There's nothing wrong with looking at the 10th step the way the 12 and 12 does. It does it. It talks about different types of inventories. You write one at the end of the day. You do one on like a semi-annual or annual basis. You have a check-in with your sponsor, and you inventory what's been going on since the last time you talked to your sponsor. You do an assets versus liabilities inventory. You answer the questions on page 86 in the big book, the evening review. I don't care if you say it's step 10. Some people get bent out of shape. It's part of step 11. You know, it's a spiritual exercise. Don't turn this into a math equation. That's not how the spiritual realm works. The spiritual realm does not say 6 equals 6, right? It's some crazy number. That's how spirituality works. Spirituality isn't supposed to like make sense and be put into a box. We are now bringing it into the material realm. It's much more than that. And so for me, this idea of taking a walking around inventory is the most attractive way of looking at step 10. And what that does, it allows me to remember that step 11 is not how I stay in conscious contact with God. Even though the step says we sought to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. You know, sought through prayer and meditation to do that. I get that's what it says. But think about any other relationship you have in your life. If I were to wake up to my partner and say, good morning, thank you for everything, I'll talk to you when I get home tonight. And I do that every day. What's that relationship going to look like? Check in and then check out at the end of the day. That's all we're doing. How do you cultivate the expectancy of God's presence in your life? How do I do that if I'm not communicating with this higher power on a regular basis? It has to be that way. And so for me, when it says that the essence of the spiritual experience is the awareness of the power, man, is it possible that I'm sitting in a spiritual experience every time I'm aware of God's presence? It turns the spiritual way of life and the awakening into something that's much more tangible, much more readily available. And so now I'm very grateful for these defects of character, because these defects of character make me aware of my God's presence, right? And so he's using the very things that I'm struggling with to sit me back down at the table with him over and over and over. And so with these character defects, yeah, we want them to be cast out, guys. But I can tell you right now, if you ask me, how long is it going to be before we get over our character defects? At least 17 years and 10 months. That's all I know. 17 years, 10 months. 11 months. Mike Lorenz, who's one of my favorite people to listen to, I've spent some weekends with him. He gave me this analogy one time. I think you were there for it. Mm-hmm. He got sober in 1985. This was like 2015 or 18. Mm-hmm. He's sitting doing a retreat for us, and he says, you know, when I got here in 1985, all my character defects were so glaring. You know, I was like, you know, he was like a picture of that open wound and life being assault. So untethered, we're just hurting people everywhere. And so his character defects were these two roaring lions that just walked with him everywhere and clawed everyone, right? He said at that point he had 30 years sober, right? He said those same defects are still with me today, except now there are these little kittens that purr next to my side, right? Because they've morphed into other things, you know? Like when I first got here, I stopped stealing, right? Stop stealing cash register honesty, all that stuff shows up. What was that an extension of? That was just the branch, right? The root was Tarek's willing to do whatever he has to do to get what he wants. That's the root. And that still, I'll go to that place. I'm willing to do a lot to get what I want, what my mind says I want and need to be okay. And so this idea of these character defects serving a purpose, serving a purpose, they connect, they bring my, if I'm practicing a 10-step and I'm trying to remember God as often as possible, I see it, God. All right, so sometimes when I walk in the door after a week on the road, I have to say, thy will be done, right? And through the thy will be done, it's like my awareness opens up and I remember my girl, her name's Newly. I remember Newly has had the boys all week by herself. No one. She doesn't even get a break while I'm out of town, right? She is responsible for every single thing in our home. I get to travel and concentrate on my job and get on Zoom calls with my sponsees and do all these other things, all right? But she has responsibilities far greater than mine. It's through those moments when I remember to say, thy will be done, and I see some aspect of my character that I'm struggling with, in that moment, they are cast out. They're cast out temporarily. So I just wanted to present this discussion of character defects in a different way. I think it's really important that we're able to make fun of ourselves, right? Because if we can't make fun of ourselves, I will not recognize my own imperfection, and my capacity to accept your imperfection will be nil. And I will be judgmental, and I'll be shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, because the sunlight of the Spirit is in you, and it's in me. If I'm shut off from you, then I'm shut off from God. And so every single step we have is about relationship. It is about connection, if we really think about it. Everything is about relationship. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Terry. The fanfare is getting me. I love that so much. That's so good. That's some stuff I have. God, I could have kept listening to you. That was really great. So y'all know me. I'm a sucker for a little recap. So very clear, third step kind of thing. Like, this ain't about me getting Lindsay getting what she wants anymore. Doesn't work, because Tarek did a great job with the script. It's very clear that y'all don't do what I want you to do. I think you should be different. Y'all the problem. I'm in collision, can't connect, separate. That's happening. And it's so funny, too, because the third step, like, it's not about Lindsay getting what she wants anymore. It's like, I don't even know. Has anyone here realized that, like I said earlier, it's like, I don't even really know what I want or need. I get them confused all the time. Like, all the time. So, we move forward with that, and there's one thing. Has anyone ever experienced someone tells you, like, hey, I think you're great. Thank you so much for doing this. I care about you. I love you. I like you. You want to hang out, but you don't believe them? Yeah? Yeah, we seem to share this. I'm going to tie this in because I realize I might not have done a good job articulating why. The inventory process, if you can get down to causes and conditions and get down to the other aspects of self and looking at those things. And I talked about the rope, where it's like, oh, man, I thought it was a snake. It's actually a rope, right? And if I can see whatever teaching's there, because a lot in the third column where you see pride, ambition, security, personal sex relations, a lot of that stuff I think I need you to do, or what I think you should believe, and you should do this, like even with my dad's example or my mom, like they should love me just as I am, and then it's like maybe I could love them just as they are. Why that? All that I'm wanting y'all to do is actually, it's actually like it's a mirror, it's a trick. It's like, no, that's actually what pointing to me and God. That's what that's doing. I don't actually need you to do anything, but I definitely am very clear that I should definitely take a look at what's going on within me. So the big, amazing thing, thank goodness I didn't just go ask my dad, like, hey, do you love me? He'd been like, course I do. I wouldn't have. He's been telling me that my whole life. Who didn't believe it? Me. Right? So that's where underneath that kind of separation. So looking at those things throughout 4 or 5, if I don't believe I didn't actually take that invitation from that experience to actually practice loving others just as they are, that it was going to allow me to receive love just as I am. I had no idea that was going to happen. I don't know anything, right? But I do believe that if I wouldn't have seen that and participated, the chances of not only me confronting that, but also when people actually share that, it's possible that I can actually believe them. Because I spent most of my time when people would say that, I did not believe them. They were full of shit. That's like, I don't know, like what changes the trajectory of your life just right there. So keep doing it. It's a big deal. And that's what's interesting. Even when I talked about like the pony, right, where I think it's going to be finally meeting someone who won't hurt me, being with someone honest. I think it's going to be the business not failing. I think it's going to be this, when really the whole time it's the fact that I'm okay either way. So it's either I'm going to confront through this process and find out that the snake is a rope, or that I get bit and that I'm okay. That there's actually healing within that. That either way I can confront and challenge and investigate and share and do things that are really scary, and I'm going to be okay. And that's pretty crazy. Especially for someone who's just driven by fear. I've been terrified most of the time. I hope that made sense. I realized that after. I was like, oh, I probably didn't make sense on why it was so important for me to love others as they are. And I could actually receive if they even do care about me, because I've never believed them anyways. Which is so sad. You know, I know there's folks in here that people tell you that they care about you, and I promise you they do, and you probably don't believe them, you know. And that's just one of the, gifts that I've received. It's unlimited. And I love that Tarek talked about, let me ask you this. Has anyone experienced finally waking up and having awareness over being very driven by their character defects? We are just like, oh, damn. Almost to the point where it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
When it says driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, like I do have direct experience multiple times of being the nut job that is acting on something that has not happened. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm having a full-blown emotional reaction to a thought. Right? I mean, it's not even here. You know, my sponsor would be like, well, Lynn, it's kind of tough to help with that because it doesn't exist. I'm like, well, oh, shit. I'm the one that will drive right down the highway because I just think you're leaving me. Boxes are packed. It's a real experience, but nothing's happened. I've literally walked in the door and expecting, you know, a U-Haul outside and Jamie's making dinner. I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, it's what I'm up against. So I have a lot of experience with having, especially getting sober in the first many years, like lots of awareness, but I did not really have any power yet or like tangible. I was just kind of getting my ass beat, you know, and it would just suck. So a lot of my experience initially with character defects, fear, all these things was just, they were the enemy. They were the enemy. The whole goal is be rid of. They are bad. And it's why I am typically hesitant anytime. I've only had to talk about 6 and 7. Like, I think you were like the only person asked me to do that. And I think I was like, ugh. And the only reason is because it's hard. It's really, really difficult because 6 and 7, it's just so much God. The whole thing is like, hey, you see this objectionable? You see it's blocking you from connecting? Yep. Okay. You good to keep going? You committed to it? Yep, I'm in. And then 7's like, good. Can't fix it. And it's like, holy shit. Has anyone tried to, like, outpray their character defects? I've done that. I've tried to outpray it. I've tried to out-inventory it. I've tried to out-sponsor it. I've tried to out-meditate it. I've tried to out workshop it. I've tried so much to beat my character defects, because my character defects, I can't necessarily see the impact on you, but I definitely see the feelings in me. I don't like it, you know? So 6 and 7, the reason they're so dope is because I don't, and the reason I don't go deep into them much is because I know that it's all God. It just has very little to do with me. But I do believe that the whole point of doing and participating in the circle and triangle, it's almost like 6 and 7's in the middle, because it's like this vortex of things that are happening. So I went from many years of trying to be very fixing, removing on my own, getting ahead of. I don't know why I think I probably get ahead of it. I'm like, well, I'm going to excel here. And that's all self-serving, and so I can feel cozy, and I don't get embarrassed, and I don't have to admit that I lied or that I'm scared or that I had a ton of time sober and acted a fool. You know, that's a main driving aspect. And kind of bringing back to what I was talking about with the full deck, and Tarek talked about it too, I really was deeply ashamed of my clubs and my spades. You know, and Tarek was talking about like the fanfare thing, you know. I have mine, which is need to be right. And I need to prove that I'm important. I wake up every few years that I'm still Bill. I need to prove to the world I'm important, because there's some piece of me that forgets and I don't think I am. I mean, it still happens. I still fall asleep and wake right back up. So it goes from, I don't want these clubs, I don't want these spades, but I love my diamonds, I love my hearts, I'm fun, I'm a nice person, I'm good, I'll be helpful. Look at all these things. God, I don't want these. These, there's nothing good about them. What good do they bring? But they're so human, and they're so us, right? And that's, so for me, the 6 and 7, like my responsibility in 6 and 7 is to hear the cards. God, these are all my cards. And it's not even just being clear with God that these are my cards. I'm fucking terrified of failing. So scared. The embarrassment. I'm scared of impacting my marriage. I'm so scared of running out of money, even if I have a ton. I'm delusional. Okay, guys? So scared of being, like, not, you know, just y'all not liking me. I'm scared of not being liked. All that stuff. Here's all my space. So not only do I have to share them with God, I've got to share them with you. And this is where all the cards come into a big play. Because the spades that I have and the clubs, the things that I don't like about me are 100% in you. And it's going to be the thing, if I can share them and show them to you and show them to God, and I can see them, I can articulate them, you can too. If I did not do that, remember I told you when I got sober, like I don't even know how to be honest. Like someone had to share with me, by them being honest for me to be like, oh, I didn't even know what that was. Like I didn't even know how to say that I was scared. You know, it was just like, I feel weird. I didn't know I was embarrassed or that I was like intimidated or anxious. People in these rooms helped put language to what I was going on. So if I can show y'all all my cards and say, this is it. Even the dark crannies, you know, with their sponsor, whoever you want to share those with. But even just every day I showed my ass today. The most recent example is with, well, it's just a fun example for me. But I get obsessive. I get like really obsessive. And so I was really obsessing because this guy, like, this trailer came up. I wanted to buy this thing. And then there was this other property I wanted to buy at the same time. So now I'm a nut job trying to figure out how I'm going to move a bunch of money around. I'm going to make this deal. But I'm getting super stressed. Nothing's happening, by the way. But I'm sweating, right? What happens? I am just not even with anyone. I can't connect to my wife. I can't connect to my friends. It's hard for me to really connect to people I'm helping because what am I doing? Right? And so I've been, this has been going on. I've been just I'm Excel spreadsheeting. You know, I'm just trying to get this thing figured out. And Jamie's like, I mean, geez, do you even like, do you have to buy these things? And I was like, yes. And it got me off guard. It interrupted this whole consumption because I need more. This whole consumption, it brought me right back into, what am I doing? I don't even need to get these. I was about to go through with a bunch of, like, literally buy on more stuff that I do not need. And it was just one comment that just, but the thing is that I am very capable, and I've done it many times, to see those things right out and then wonder down the line why I'm overwhelmed and stressed, why I put myself in this position. A lie that I needed more, you know, a lie that I'm not okay with what I have, a lie that, you know, whatever it is, right? But the great thing is that hopefully with having that deck and having the clubs and spades and the defects and the assets, the whole idea is that, hey, for me, I've made friends with them in the best way that me and my creator now have. They're not bad. They're not awful. But I have them. And the reason I try to make friends with them, in a sense, it's just like the easiest language. I don't resist it. I have it. So that way I can be gentle and allow others to be gentle with myself when we go into, especially working with, Tarik was talking about with the 10 step. So instead of me defending or justifying or beating myself up or thinking I'm the worst, I can just name it, acknowledge it, own it, pray about it, and see that I got swept up again and that it's okay. Because at the end of the day, I'm very sincere in that I do my best. That I do know. And I'm very clear, I'm going to fall short. And I'm going to make so many mistakes. Even when the book talks about, like, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, to me, the perfection genuinely is in just being truthful. Like, it's that is it. Where I'm going to make mistakes. It's I know that I'm going to have to make amends. I know I'm going to fall asleep again. I know I'm going to step on someone's toes. I'm going to step on my own toes. You know, I'm going to do those things. But the neat thing is in the past, I would try to do everything I can to not do that. So therefore, if I did that, I would have to justify, rationalize it was hard. Now, it's okay. And I can genuinely mend it and care to try to heal it. Because it's not the big bad monster. It's just those things that God is, that we all have, but it actually connects all of us, the whole deck. And that's what, I guess I could, I mean, what time?
Yeah, plenty of time.
Oh, okay. So I did also wanted to mention, I mean, I really love talking about the 10 step, but it's also hard. I'm also an 8-step person, a 9-step person. Because honestly, even with all the defects, and I hope that made some sense. Because even in the amends process, I'm very blessed. Oh my God, this is what I want to say. I need to say this, y'all. This is so important. I can honestly say that I do not believe, I mean, I can be sure, but I don't believe I would have been able to complete all of my 9-step amends if it was not for friends. So if there's anyone here that has a really long 8-step list, which I don't know, I did. Derek's is much longer though. I mean, his was like really long. It's like, oh man. I just know this was instrumental for me. This was an instrumental thing that happened, like, which is, of course, I wouldn't be able to share anything of what I'm talking about without friends in the program, teachers, mentors, just buds. And not only that, we did it all together. So if Tarik was like, hey, I want to like have an 8-step like accountability group, I promise you I'd been like that Because, dude, I started, I made all these great amends, and then, like, 4 years, I was so spiritual, I don't have time for it, you know? Like, I was just, like, way too in the book to be doing amends. And they just fell to the side. And then Tarek's like, hey, I want to, you know, set up a group to do this. And we met, I don't know if it was every week or every other week. Or
we did it before home group, I think.
Yeah,
remember.
We did.
Yeah.
And I tell you one thing, the ones that I was scared or I didn't understand, because there's so many amends where it's like, what does this mean? Just getting with friends who are wanting to do the same thing, wanting to make amends, wanting to actually complete this stuff and have an experience, just meeting with them every week. Because there's one thing, I was scared to do some of those. But I also wasn't going to go to, like, Tarek and Carl, my buddies, and be like, well, I wussed out. You know, like, I mean, I'm not going to do that. So much of my experience with participating and, like, doing things I didn't even, that I was really scared to do, was so I didn't look like a loser in front of my friends. And then I got a result from it. Who would have thunk it? People would be like, well, that's out of something. I'm like, I don't know what it's out of, but I know that it happened. I'm not mad about it. So I would, it's always been a big suggestion of mine. If you do, it was so important. I hold one myself. So once a month, for about 6 months out of the year, I invite women, and if they're like want to meet to try to get clarity, because without clarity, there's no movement and no power with their eighth step. And if you don't have that in eighth step, how are you going to do it in the ninth step? You kind of got to, you know, do that way. And that's the whole intention, is to provide a space to where there's accountability and people that are excited about mending. People are excited about relationships, because that's the whole point of nine. It's for others. It is genuinely, and that's what's so funny when people get real deep and they're like, well, I don't know if I really, like, really owe an amends. And it's like, but there's like, I'm like, okay, but like, has anyone like apologized to you? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, how did that feel? And they're like, it was great. And I'm like, why don't you just go do that? You know, it's really great to just go apologize, clean up your side of the street. And of course, I'm not going to spend a bunch of time in the mechanics or stuff with amends, but I can say this. The impact of direct amends, and of course, I've talked quite a bit about like ones in my family, and they were a big deal because they were the ones that have been most long lasting and the ones that required probably the highest amount of continually keeping my word, because a lot of it, it's like, what do I need to do? So it's like my mom, I owed her money, and she was like, they used, they had saved some money. My folks saved some money for me to go to college, but that money didn't go to me going to college. It went to attorneys, medical bill, you know, treatment, stuff like that. So her one request for me was to go to school and to get a degree. Which, if my mom wouldn't ask me, I would have never done that. I don't like school. It's hard for me. It's annoying. You know, I didn't like anything about it, but I did it. And it took me a long time. And with my dad, I wasn't able to, we didn't really talk for years until about 5 years sober. Because when I first made amends to him, he just shook his head and he said, sounds good. But I never kept my word. So for them, it was the continuation of participating and connecting. But there's still, when I look at the amends process as far as reconnecting to my brothers and sisters and actually knowing that we are connected and that it's okay and that can admit its mistakes, it allows you to admit mistakes, it allows you to be in touch with your own humanity, with everyone else's humanity, and this whole thing is about a relationship with God, and that is one of the first places that it actually starts to, like, really connect. And I remember making amends or even apologies and 10-step stuff was so hard. And now I do it, and sometimes it's like the easiest thing. It's like I can't wait to do it because I know that my shortcomings and my defects have an impact. And the ripple effect for the harm is the same ripple effect for the mending. So any time that, like, the harm goes out, but man, if you can mend, if you can make those, it's actually tenfold. It's just been on and on and on. So that's all I got for now. Thanks for letting me share. Was that a little early?
No, we're good.
What time we started?
No, okay. We're good. We'll come back at 2:00 and wrap it up.